Live from Love City Brewing in Manayunk, along the course of the Philadelphia Cycling Classic, this is Studio 2.
It is Thursday, August 27th. Welcome, 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 friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Kevin McCory, in for Avi Wolfman-Aaron. Yes. Super excited today to be at Love City Brewing with this live audience. Look at the beautiful
Yay.
People here.
Y'all look good. Yeah. They look good.
Cherry, the bike race is back.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
I've got a lot of personal great memories of the bike race. My brother and sister-in-law used to live right on the course, and we would watch from the porch.
Oh, y'all have fun. Yeah.
We used to live right at the top of the wall, and we would see everybody training leading into the race that week, and people from all over the world would be there.
Yeah.
And then when we bought our another house in the neighborhood, I remember the first year we were there, it's like 7:30 in the morning, and we hear a full band start playing. We're like, what's going on? It's race day, and our neighbors just decided to hire a full band to party. So we're so excited that the race is back. It's meant so much for the city, for this neighborhood, for so long.
Yeah, and I'm so excited. When I was a reporter a few years back, I reported on the bike race, and I used to be up at Lemon Hill with all the people partying and just having a good time. And so Sunday, we get to relive those memories when the bike race commences.
And really incredible story of how it came back together. And we have the organizers here with us today. We're going to unpack that story. And we're hoping that we hear from our listeners
today,
too. Share your Philly bike race memories and what you think the return means for the city. You can call us at 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. Or if you're following along on the live stream on Facebook and YouTube, drop us a comment.
Yeah, and so we start our show today, like we do all of our shows, with a trio of local news stories. And I'll kick it off. If you didn't hear, tech giant Meta has settled its lawsuits with 47 attorneys general for $17 billion. And New Jersey and Pennsylvania, they're going to get a piece of that record-breaking pot. Shout out to WHYY's David Matthau for reporting that New Jersey will get at least $525 million. Pennsylvania will get around $516 million. And this is reportedly the largest state consumer protection settlement in history outside of the big tobacco case settlements back in the 90s. The settlement, which is subject to court approval, stems from a lawsuit filed in California that alleges that Facebook and Instagram were causing young people to become addicted to the social media platforms. But in addition to the money, Meta is also required to implement a number of safety features designed to protect kids and teens from their apps. Some of the protections include a two-hour time limit for combined use of Facebook and Instagram, including automatic pauses after different time periods. So after 15 minutes, they're going to have to take a pause, and after 60 minutes, another pause. And this will stay in place for 5 years. Youth will also be prohibited from using the apps between midnight and 6 a.m. There's also going to be some other safeguards against bullying and content that promotes self-harm. And they will also do some extra work, Kevin, to better verify people's ages. Because right now, you know, kids are so savvy, they'll get around the age verification. And so it's harder to manage that. And so this is a pretty big deal.
Lots of criticism, obviously, of big tech and the impact it's having on mental health, especially for kids. And I think the question out there is this settlement, this string of successful litigations against big tech, going to be the watershed moment, like you mentioned, big tobacco, where things changed, the narrative changed, people's awareness changed, and suddenly the world changed a little bit because of that. And that's the question now. And like you said, even if they put these new restrictions in place, how much will they matter? Will kids find ways to work around them? All that stuff still has to be worked out.
And by the way, the other big question is, if you tell them they can't use Instagram or Facebook, they'll just go to TikTok. And so now there's going to be a lot of pressure to get TikTok, Snapchat, and YouTube to also settle and put in similar restrictions. So we'll be watching this closely. And there could be more lawsuits filed because this could just be the beginning.
Yeah, story number two, Cherry. Mm-hmm. New details are coming out about what the two measles-related deaths in Lancaster County that the state reported earlier this week. So we talked about this on the show on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. At a press conference Tuesday morning, Governor Josh Shapiro said that these are the first measles cases in the state in 35 years. Now, what we know now is one of those deaths was a newborn, but the Lancaster County coroner is pushing back, saying his office has not confirmed them as measles deaths, and that while the newborn was positive for measles, they died because of a ruptured spleen, shortly after birth. Okay, so based on these conflicting accounts, now we have Governor Josh Shapiro and Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy going back and forth on social media, with RFK Jr. accusing Shapiro of rushing to announce the deaths for political gain. And he said, quote, Governor Shapiro got his headlines. He correctly gambled that the slavish mainstream media would dutifully amplify his scolding without any effort to check his facts. Mm. There's also a Republican Lancaster County commissioner critiquing state officials, asking for more clarity. And Josh Shapiro, in return, is saying this is all gaslighting. So what seemed like a clear-cut story on Tuesday is now full of confusion, conflicting accounts, and politics. Shout out to the Philadelphia Inquirer for getting CHOP vaccine expert Paul Offit to weigh in on this. Offit said the Lancaster County coroner's perspective doesn't actually provide real clarity on the issue, saying that measles can cause a ruptured spleen.
So
right?
There's that.
So there's that, and he's been in contact with state health officials who told him the deaths wouldn't have happened if not for measles. So open questions on this. Hopefully we get more clarity from state officials, from Lancaster County officials, and we're going to talk about this more in depth on the show on Monday.
On Monday. This is going to be our big topic, and clearly this has become a very contentious issue. And we talked about this on the show this week, but we have about 400 cases of measles in Pennsylvania this year. Last year, we only had 16. Full stop. 400 this year, 16 last year, okay? That's a huge spike. All of this comes as anti-vaccine sentiment is rising and more parents are refusing to vaccinate their children. This is going to be our topic, as Kevin said, on Monday, because school is back in session in our region. And as kids get back in the classroom, the risk rises that we could see more cases of people are not vaccinated. So we all have a lot to talk about. We'll have some experts.
And we'll be following the facts as usual.
So our third story.
A little lighter.
Yeah, a little lighter. A Pennsylvania family stumbled upon a prehistoric shark tooth during a visit to the Jersey Shore. And let me tell you, y'all, this tooth is massive. Yeah, nearly the size of a human hand, okay? Why? Because the fossil is said to be from a megalodon. And maybe you've seen the Jason Statham movie, Meg. I have. I love me some Jason Statham. But anyway, I digress. If you haven't, a megalodon is arguably one of the largest and most powerful predators to have ever lived. It's a giant mackerel shark, which could grow to up to 60 feet long. It lived anywhere from 23 to 3.5 million years ago. So it's unclear how the tooth from this millions of years old shark ended up in Seattle City. But on August 14th, the massive shark tooth got stuck in a rock jetty and the family found it.
Scientists, massive tooth in Seattle City. This thing's gigantic. And the family just comes across it.
They roll up and they snatch the tooth. And so scientists from Cape May Whale Watch and Research Center, they confirmed it was from a megalodon. So we got an expert saying it is. And a local paleontologist argued that fossils this age, they're usually buried 600 to 1,000 feet below the surface in New Jersey. So there's no natural way that this tooth could have been, you know, I guess, loosened and come to the surface.
Right. Raises a lot of questions.
It raises a lot of questions, but they said that some of this.
How did the tooth get there?
I don't know. They said offshore dredging may have had something to do with it. I don't know, but they're lucky. I would have been like, you know, if I saw that big tooth, because it's so big. I mean, I don't have little hands, but I feel like that tooth is bigger than my hand.
What's the wildest thing you've ever found on the beach, Jerry?
Some dead things. You know, I mean, I don't really, like, and I used to collect shells and stuff like that. I haven't found anything too wild. This is telling me you found something wild.
Well, I mean, you got your crazy jellyfish, stuff like that. But what's a real thrill is when you find, like, one of those perfect conch shells, and it's just, like, still intact, and it's, like, beautiful and spirally, and you can save it on your
shell. Can you blow in it and just, like, make that sound that they do on the cartoon?
Yes.
You know?
But if I found a giant megalodon tooth, I'm putting that right up on the archway of the house.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to put that in the glass case.
There's no arguing with my wife about that. That's going right up front and center in the living room.
And you know, that means you would make history because there's only been like 5 megalodon teeth found in the Garden State. So if you found that, man, you better hold on to it.
Would you brush it?
Probably not. You want all that dirt and soot and old school like bacteria to remain on that tooth to keep it authentic, right? You want it to be as authentic as possible. So you want that prehistoric bacteria.
I buy that logic. All right, we're really excited to, in just a few moments after the break, jump into our conversation about the return of the Philly bike race.
Oh,
we've got the organizers here. We've got a really amazing story to tell about what this race means to the city and how they brought it back. Really, you know, a story of a will, essentially, Cherry, to revive this thing from the dead. So we are very excited to share that conversation with you. We want to hear from our listeners today.
Absolutely.
Share your Philly bike race memories, what you think the return means for the city. Give us a call, 888-477-9499, or email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube and Facebook, comment in the live chat.
Oh, yeah. We'll be right back.
To ride my bicycle, races are coming your way, so forget all your duties.
And now back to our Studio 2 On the Road special before a live audience in Manayunk along the course of the Philadelphia Cycling Track.
Yes.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Kevin McCrory in for Avi Wolf-Manera.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. This Sunday, the Philadelphia Cycling Classic makes its long-awaited return. More than 200 pro riders will take to the streets, racing from the Benjamin Franklin Parkway along the banks of the Schuylkill River and up the grueling 17% grade Manayunk Wall. The race is a 14.4-mile circuit, meaning cyclists have to conquer the wall again and again and again.
And that multi-loop course makes it a thrill for spectators. The Philadelphia Cycling Classic was always an iconic road race. Starting in 1985, bikers used it as a proving ground for the Tour de France. But sadly, 2016 was the last one. But now it's back, and it took a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to revive it. We've got two of the organizers here with us today. Carlos Rogers is the owner of Hush Salon in Old City. Welcome. And Michael Nutter, of course, is the former mayor of Philadelphia. Welcome. Both are co-owners of the Philadelphia Cycling Classic. Also with us is Freddie Rodriguez, a former pro cyclist who won the Classic in 2001.
Yes.
He'll be calling all the action this weekend as a color commentator for 6abc.com. So thank you all, gentlemen, for being here with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and as always, to our listeners at home, on the road, or elsewhere, we'd love to hear from you today. You can share your Philly bike race memories and tell us what you think its return means for the city. The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our streamers on Facebook and YouTube, you could put those memories and your thoughts in the chat.
Yeah, let's start with you, former Mayor Michael Nutter. This race started in 1985 and went through 2016, like we said. You were obviously mayor for two terms during that. You also were a council member who represented this area.
Yeah.
Could you speak to what the race meant to the community for those 30 years?
Passion. The excitement that the Philadelphia Cycling Classic brought to Philadelphia, maintained in Philadelphia, and elevated Philadelphia on the national and international road racing scene is, I think, virtually unparalleled. But it's always been the people's race. This is a community event. It brings people together. What I've characterized it as, it's an all-day party that happens to feature a bike race. You know, the riders go through the different communities, depending on the pace at the time, maybe about a 25 to 30 minute gap between seeing them, the cowbells, the now music and everything, and then they're gone, right? It's like a big whoosh, and then it's everything in between, right?
Yeah.
It's the party, it's the, you know, water, beverage, different things.
Beer.
It's just a whole lot of fun. And beer.
Yeah, and I think about it because, you know, both of us have experienced the bike race, as many people in this room have. But tell us what happened. Like, what happened that it just sort of went away? Because, I mean, people, just remind us before we talk about all the effort to bring it back.
I think we don't actually know all of that. This is a tough sport, and it's certainly there's finance involved. There are a lot of people involved. It does require a certain amount of commitment and passion to having this kind of event. The business model is a little challenging. So I don't know exactly what happened, What I know is we made a commitment to bring it back.
Yeah.
And it's not going away.
Yeah. And I'm just curious, like, before it ended, you know, you were mayor, and I know it's felt like year by year. It's like, will it happen this year? Won't it happen this year? Were you involved in that year by year? And like, what were those conversations like?
Very much so. You know, as you mentioned, I was the district councilman, so I had all of that time. But as mayor, we, in the latter part of my second term, we actually took over the race to help ensure that it would be here, that continuity, that consistency. And then, you know, I left. We made preparation for the 2016 race. And then after that, that was that. But the gentleman to my right, your left, is the reason the Philadelphia Cycling Classic is back.
And so, Carlos, we, perfect timing. We said blood, sweat, and tears. It said, the mayor said passion. You have all those things. So tell us about your involvement. I know you are an avid cyclist. You love cycling. Tell us how you got involved and decided, you know what, I'm going to roll up my sleeves. I'm going to get it done.
I mean, I think initially it was just a calling. I never expected to be in this situation with being doing a live show in front of WHYY listeners in my wildest dreams, and here we are. And I've been cycling for about 30 years as a competitor. My brother owns Bicycle Therapy on South Street. He's had it for over 35 years. That's where I got my start into cycling. And I raced competitively for a number of years. Took a break to get into a different career, hairstyling, and was living in New York. And we moved back. I started putting on my own smaller race called the Criterium, which is a much smaller version, a sanctioned event in Riverton, New Jersey, where I live. And this year marked the 15th year that I've done that, so I'm very proud of that achievement, and I give money back to the community. And during that time, I lamented, just like everybody else,
What happened to the bike race?
What happened to the bike race?
Yeah.
And you would see comments on Facebook or Instagram from whether or not it was community people or previous racers that would always compare Philly to other races around the world. And it was getting kind of boring, I guess, listening to that. And also there's been a challenge with professional cycling in this country. And in 2022... there was an inaugural race in Maryland called the Maryland Cycling Classic, which I watched streaming. And right after that race, I basically looked in the mirror and I said, we need Philly back. We have to bring this race back.
And just
I'm going
to
give
be
it a crack.
Clear, you're not like some, you're like, you're a business owner.
I'm like everybody
in this room. You're like a regular guy. You're not, even though you have done your own races, it's not like you're this is what you do for a living.
Yeah. No, I own a hair salon with my wife in Philadelphia. I have a son who's going to be a senior. We have an Airbnb. I work full-time in the salon, and I manage the salon. So I'm just a normal guy, and I really want people to know that. But we're all normal guys, and I just want to shout out to Mayor Nutter and Eric Robbins, who's not on the panel, my other business associate.
But just an amazing, inspiring story for all of us to say, hey, we have a big
change
idea.
Agent.
We want to try to do something. Well, there's a big difference between looking yourself in the mirror and saying, I'm going to do this, and then getting it done.
Right.
So how did you get it done?
So, you know, first of all, this is a passing of the baton. I never would have come up with the idea to put on a bike race on this course in Philadelphia. The previous promoters did that. It existed. It was here. So we're just thinking plug and play, right? I already know that the people of the city love this race. I already know that the athletes love the race. How are we going to get this done? And so the first person that I called was a woman named Robin Morton, who's in the USA Cycling Hall of Fame, has her own event management company called G4 Events, knows everybody around the world in cycling. And she was a technical advisor for a number of years here in Philly. She managed a team that had a race winner, Roberto Gaggioli, I believe in 1989, that won the team with Pepsi. And I called her out of the blue. We had never met. And I said, hey, I'm thinking about bringing Philly back. What do you think? And she said, great, great race. Love the race. Always a great thing for the city. And happy to help out however I can.
And then how did you end up linked with former Mayor Michael Nutter and Eric? How did you get that group together? Because you got power players in the mix, and
right.
Then boom, doors start opening, things start happening, maybe?
Well, it was 2 years on my own,
okay.
Really, in between haircuts, emailing cold calls, literally going to businesses, knocking on their doors, dropping off hard decks, sponsorship decks.
Wow.
The first community that I reached out to was the Maniac Neighbors Council. Robin said, if you don't get the community on board, you're not going to have a race. And for people who live in the area, you know, sometimes too much of a good thing leads to a bad thing, and there was some love-hate relationship with the people, crowds coming in and so forth.
Right.
So she is an encyclopedia of knowledge. She gave me a ton of advice. She gave me a ton of ideas of how to move forward. But it was blood, sweat, and tears for a couple of years.
So after 2 years, you finally get a breakthrough, and this breakthrough is this coalition you built. Tell us about the coalition and how doors, because I know you got a lot of no's.
Everybody was a no. I got a lot of, I got a no from Michael Nutter.
Wait, what?
I reached out. My partner Eric doesn't like it, but I have had a pot on boil for 4 years. I keep putting spaghetti in, and I sling it and see what sticks.
Yeah.
And one of those slings was a cold email. I looked him up, Columbia EDU. He's a teacher at Columbia.
I completely ignored it. and he reached out to my wife.
I reached out to Lisa Nutter,
who's a cyclist, by the way.
I mean, if you go through our list of people...
You go through the wife. You caught that, y'all? Go through the wife. Go right ahead. Yeah.
But she declined as well. So it was a long list of no's, and really on the last legs of what I felt giving it 100%, because nobody was telling me to do this.
And so...
And then that's when I met one of our clients is Eric Robbins, who is a client of my coworkers at Hush. And my coworker said, why don't you ask Eric for some help? He's an entrepreneur. He loves Philly. Okay. I reached out to Eric. He said, send me your stuff. Let me take a look. I didn't really know what Eric did on the side business-wise, but I knew he had acumen for that. I won't use any expletives, but once he got the deck, he's like, we gotta effing do this. I love this city.
And so you get a new... And I
new
just
energy.
Wanna, yeah, you get yeah. a new energy, and... So kind of what did it
then
take?
Then Eric reached out to me.
And then you took Eric's call, see?
I took Eric's call, yeah, because I know Eric.
Call.
I didn't know him.
He didn't know me.
And it was a timing issue as well. It's not that I didn't want the race to come back, but in 22, 23, into 24, I just didn't see the synergy of making things happen.
So what do you think was the big catalyst, the big difference that you think made now the right time?
I'd say, and it's normally I'd say in a word, but this is not a word. But it was Mayor Parker. I knew that this administration would be open to the idea of trying to do something like this. And then when we started looking further ahead, the three of us, we realized what 2026 was going to be. And that is really where the story starts to take off.
Well, Freddie Rodriguez, you've been up here listening, but you're a cyclist, a pro cyclist. You've done this. You've won this race. Could you speak a little bit about the significance of this race and what it means in the larger context of the pro cycling world?
When you look at Philly and the race and what it meant to cycling in my era, I was in the 2000s, early 2000s when I won it. That jersey is from 2001. It was like the pinnacle of U.S. racing. It was our classic, which, it was our monument. You know, we have five big monuments in the world for, like, Milan-San Remo, Flanders, Roubaix. And for some reason, Philly just fit into that. You know, it fit the same character of riders. It was a very creative race. It was hard, but it also had a lot of tactics involved. So, and then it had the city that just created this amphitheater for a race. It's like when you come into the Benjamin Franklin Parkway, you're in the stadium, and you know the fans on Manioc, the fans on Lemon Hill, all those things just add on to the perfect environment. We need that as riders, and so when I did the Olympics in Sydney, you had that. When you do Roubaix, you have that. When you come to Philly, you have that. So that's why this race means so much to cycling. It's once riders get to do it, new riders have never done it before, they're going to feel that and go, okay, this is a real classic.
Yeah, and I want to bring in somebody. We have Olympic legend Eric Heiden on the line. You may remember he was the only athlete to sweep all five speed skating events at a single Winter Olympics. He won five gold medals, y'all. That was in 1980 in Lake Placid, but he also made history in Philadelphia. He won the inaugural Philadelphia International Cycling Championship. So we have Eric on the line. Eric, you are on Studio 2. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Yes, and so we're so excited to have you. And I want to just sort of have you take us back to 1985, that inaugural Philadelphia International Cycling Championship. We just heard Fast Freddy talking. And he was talking about just the fans and what it was like. Take us back to 1985. What was it like riding through, being the first group of riders to take on the Philadelphia race?
It was a great experience because, as Freddie said, it became a big part of USA Cycling, and it was a well-run race. I was riding with the team 7-Eleven, and we had spent a lot of time in Europe racing, and coming to Philadelphia to participate in a race that was basically a good pro race, good distance for a national championship, so it was challenging, and the crowd was amazing. The course was amazing. Riding down along the Schuylkill River and then heading up through Manayunk, where you had crowds lining the side of the road, and then heading back into Philadelphia again was a race course that really stood out as a good quality race course with a good quality contingent of races put on by a group that really knew how to organize a good quality race.
Yeah, Eric, and most people know you as a speed skater, and they might forget that you won this race. Like, how did you make that transition? Was this just like a hobby of yours, and then you, whoops, I won the race?
No,
whoops, I won. That was funny.
Yeah, it was an afterthought getting on my bike. Now, I spent a lot of time in the summer cross training, because when I was a skater, everything was outdoors, so you had to wait for the winter time to come, so you had to do something to stay in shape, and cycling was a big part of our summertime training program. And I was lucky enough to get involved with 7-Eleven at its infancy, and always had a dream as a young kid when I was riding my bike. I wanted to be a superstar like Eddie Merckx. And after the Olympics were done in 80, I picked up the cycling as a number one sort of priority in the sports. And gosh, you know, it was a good time in cycling. America's cycling was really pretty popular, and we had a lot of good racing in America, and 7-Eleven was one of the premier teams who was really spearheading the cause.
Yeah, did you have any idea that day when you started the race that you were going to be the first Philly winner?
Listen, you never expect to win, but you always have the hope. I was riding for a very strong team, and, you know, within teams, there's always leaders. I was not one of the team leaders.
Wow.
And so, I was, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, Eric. Yeah, you're a surgeon now, as I understand it, in Wisconsin. And thank you for taking time out of your busy surgeon schedule to do this. If we put you at the bottom of the Manayunk wall right now with a bike, could you make it to the top?
I'd be doing the, I guess it's the paper boy, you know, swerve, trying to get up the top of that.
Get up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
when
he could.
Steep, it's not that
but he could
long,
do it. Yeah.
But
darn, I'm pretty sure steep. You can do it pretty fast.
Yeah.
Though.
Yeah. Well, we.
Thanks.
Well, thank you so much. That was Olympic legend Eric Heiden on the phone. And, Eric, I mean, as we wrap up the call with you, just one last question. Do you have any advice for the riders who are going to be hitting the trail on Sunday?
Well, be prepared. It's a long race. I hope the weather is good. It can be hot and humid, so you got to be prepared and stay well hydrated and keep the nutrition up. And use the Manayunk wall. You know, the race, the course is not – I mean, I say not that challenging. The distance is what gets you, but you can use the Manayunk wall to your advantage if you've got the ability to climb that thing and get down the other side.
All right. Well, thank you so All much. Right. Eric Heiden right
if.
Here.
If.
Getting some nice comments on YouTube. Look, a bear says we lived blocks away and would walk to a corner, ring our cowbells and cheer, and then walk home and watch the race, rinse and repeat. Really, really fun times. Thank you for that comment on YouTube. And Freddie, I'm curious if you can just speak to like the evolution of cycling in the United States. And we kind of had the big Lance Armstrong moment and the Floyd Landis moment. And where are we now in comparison? Like, what's the meta story of cycling in the U.S.?
It's funny because, you know, hearing Haydn talk about Eric, about his era, that's the era that got me into cycling. I went to the 84 Olympics and watched Alexei Graywall win the gold medal there, and that got me really hooked. And then it was our era, you know, the 2000s were doing really well. It was a big change in pro cycling, and I think now the young generation, it's a whole different environment. They're racing different, nutrition's different, bikes are faster. I mean, it's just, there's so much being thrown at them. So it's an exciting moment. I like how they're racing. I like how the personalities that they are, how they, you know, you hear Tade now, you know, the discussions after races of, like, you know, hugs and, you know, and basically good jobs and really good group of guys are coming on. And that, so it's changed a lot.
Am I right or wrong to think there was kind of a dark moment with all this doping scandal stuff that the racing community had to, like, somehow learn through that or get through that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it was a moment and a change in way people were doing things, and luckily, the sport has taken it upon. I think we're probably the leader in anti-doping in all sports. So the young generation is really, really onto that and understanding that, and that's why nutrition's so big now. It's like when, you know, Eric was talking about nutrition, that is the number one thing these guys understand.
Yeah, and as you get, if you think about the race, I mean, Sunday, days from now, you're going to be doing the play-by-play, Freddie, and I just think about the course, and you've ridden this course multiple times, and so what are some of the techniques? Because I'm like looking, I'm going to probably be out there in Lemon Hill cheering them on, and so one of the things folks have said is that there are ways that you can make this course work for you. Eric sort of said you can use the Manayunk wall. I mean, I don't want you to give away all the secrets, but...
I'm going to give them away. That's my job.
Give it away. Talk about this course and, you know, spectators that are going to be watching it. What should we be looking for? What's going to be happening? How do you use something like the Manayunk wall to your advantage?
I mean, as you heard Eric, he said everybody uses the wall a different way. I mean, a race has, like, its own energy. Imagine... is its own environment that's created by the course, by the riders, by the fans, and you feed off that. And so the race has those pinch points, and so Manayunk's one of those pinch points. And it's not so much Manayunk, but it's even the lead up along Main Street. As you're coming up Main Street, that herd of riders trying to position themselves to make that last corner, and you make a right turn onto the cobblestones, and it's rough, and then the guys at the front get an advantage. You know, so you're trying to be that rider at the advantage. But then you have to think, you know, it's a long race. How much energy do you want to spend on that climb? And some people are super excited and want to go in an early breakaway or are afraid of being left behind, so they don't know how to judge how much energy to put into that climb. So they use too much, and so understanding how much energy to give, when to give energy. And then you have Lemon Hill, and then you have Kelly Drive, which is a big open road and kind of creates an environment we can't control.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of different environments.
Is there a chill point on this, like where you can just coast a little bit?
The fall from the wall.
The fall from the wall. Okay.
Yeah, those chill points could be a chill point, but somebody could take advantage of that chill point. Yeah. Yeah.
So you can never.
I think Cherry's. I'm getting the impression Cherry's thinking about going pro.
We can get you out with Lisa for sure.
Try to get some free training.
So Carlos, let's use the Manayunk wall as a metaphor right now. You're still not at the top of that wall yet. I don't think you're going to be at the top of that wall until that race kicks off Sunday.
Yeah.
And I'm imagining the journey from the bottom to the top. There was a lot of tough moments. And there were moments where you thought, why am I doing this? Does this make any sense? What am I sacrificing personally? How is this affecting my family? Why don't I just cut bait and walk away? And take us to those moments.
My partners know.
When you thinking that yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, I'm an emotional guy. I'm going to try not to tear up.
You can tear up.
The,
it's okay.
The biggest person that I have to thank is my wife. She has given me the most support to do this because there are times when it's a very lonely road, and for whatever reason, I continue to push it. And you know, this isn't really about myself at all. Mm-hmm. I spoke to people in the cycling community that want to think that, well, maybe this is the new movement for bike racing in America. I did this for purely selfish reasons. I love bike racing. I love Philadelphia. I love this race. And so I'm not trying to be the savior for American bike racing. I'm trying to bring the race back to Philly. And all my clients at the salon who I would talk to every day, and they would light up when I said I was looking for sponsors, and they would say, who could I call? How can I help you? Because people just love this race. I never got a no from anybody except, in the Ivory Towers.
And Michael.
Right.
And Michael. And the wife,
But when I was working kind of independently before I got this great team together, everybody that I spoke to just lit up about this race, and that's what it means to me. I light up. I get goosebumps all the time.
Yeah. So how do you think you're going to feel? Because, stuff is already – they're going to start closing down the streets. Yeah. The preparation is going to be late. You got the cyclists that are going to be coming into town. Just sort of like the feeling as we lead up to race day.
Man. Well, I think people know, but, we can never tell people enough. There are two races.
Mm-hmm.
There's a women's race and a men's race. And so the women's race is in the morning. I think air gun goes off at 8:30. And then the men somewhere around 12:30 in that neighborhood. So the women's race, which when it started in 85, there was only the men's race. And then eventually it was women's race. There are actually more women cyclists in Sunday's race.
Wow.
And the prize money's equal, as I understand.
Purse parity.
You get a clap for that. You get a clap for that.
And that was, Carlos, of course, talked about his wife. That was Lisa's idea. She pushed that during our administration and assisted. Became one of the first international races to require purse parity. We have an amazing group of cyclists, as you said, over 200, 28 countries represented. And so we were teasing each other just yesterday, thinking about what is Sunday going to be like. And I think when that first horn goes off, I know it's real, I know it's happening, but I think until I hear that horn, it won't fully be real, but it'll be a moment.
Yeah, and I want to ask about the future. And I know we got to wait for Sunday to happen. But, the community is going to come back. People are getting excited about this.
Yeah.
Is this going to be a one-off, or are you hoping that this is something that becomes, a continuation of all the things that Philadelphia had previously built?
We went into this with the commitment of a complete return, that it is an annual event, that we do what had been done. That is the only reason to put the time, effort, blood, sweat, tears, relationships, everything on the line. And so, but as you said, we have to do this one well, and I think we will. I'm anticipating Sunday's just going to be a fantastic experience for everyone, and I think we'll probably take a couple days, and then it's start working on 2027.
Yeah, you had something to add, Carlos.
Well, I just want to acknowledge that we would not be here without a title sponsor, and that's really the crux of this whole foundation, the economic backbone. And so we were able to secure AmeriGas as our title sponsor with a wonderful CEO and his partners, who's a cyclist himself, and they're located in King of Prussia. And so you talk about moving that rock uphill. You're just trying everything to get someone to listen. And we are so grateful to have AmeriGas step on board and hopefully have them for years to come, because it takes a belief from and an investment in not only what we're doing, what we believe, but in the community and the bike race.
Just to talk about the economics of it, I'm sure that's a big piece of what had to be figured out, because it's not like bike racing on TV is something that we're used to really watching and dialing in as an American audience. Right. So to try to convince a sponsor to come on board when they're not going to get all that exposure.
And there's no tickets, it's a free event. Yeah.
It must be difficult, right? It's a great community event. We've been talking about all the benefits that come from being in the neighborhoods and the city. So what's that conversation like? How do you convince a big sponsor to come on board to something that is like a community event and not a TV event?
Well, as you said, it is free to the public, but it's not free, right? It costs a lot of money.
We can laugh. They don't understand.
It costs a lot of money to put something like this on. So, Carlos mentioned AmeriGas, and of course Penn Medicine is a premier sponsor, and a number of others, small, medium, and large. As I've often said, nickels, dimes, quarters eventually make a dollar. And we've been cobbling those dollars together across a spectrum of sponsors. This race goes well. Obviously, we want to have all those folks come back, and then others. I think, and this was certainly another challenge that Carlos faced, events like this don't usually come back.
Yeah.
And certainly not after 10 years. And so I think there are some other potential sponsors who are like, let's see what happens.
Yeah. And so you have
Let's see what happens.
And we have about a minute or so left in the show. So I want to get some advice to fans watching. Where's the best place to watch? How should you do the thing? Because people's memories might be a little rusty.
Well, there's a whole bunch of folks that have never seen it.
Oh, and there's a bunch of people who haven't seen it. So quickly, if each of you could take about 20 seconds each to just lay out your best advice for fans. Carlos, we'll go down the line.
Yeah.
Just before that, I want to plug a couple of activations that we're having. So we have a two-day fan fest that's across from the Art Museum with over 100 vendors, beer garden, cafe, food trucks. And that'll be all day Saturday and Sunday.
So you could do that.
You could do that. And that's also right across from the Feed Zone. So that'll be my spot, what I would say. People can watch. The Feed Zone is an interesting area where if the riders need food or water or certain kind of nutrition, as Freddie alluded to, it's kind of on the go.
And those gel packs,
it's called a soigneur. They will hand up a bottle or a bag, and it's a very art form to get that on the go. So if you're by the Feed Zone, you might be able to see the riders grab what's called a musette bag, throw it over their shoulder, and when they get a chance, dig in, put their food in, put their bag in, and then toss the bag to a friend.
And we only got less than a minute. Yeah, go ahead.
Ben Franklin Parkway, Lemon Hill, and obviously Manioc.
Many
Fast Freddy,
and
final word.
I'm going to put it together. Freddy. Basically, go to the start. Watch it start. It's an amazing start. Just get the energy of the riders going off, and then get on the bus and go to Manioc and spend the day there, and then come back down to watch the finish.
You telling people, move around, Fast Freddy. I like that.
Not a bad seat in the house.
We have dedicated buses that will be taking people up to the climb.
Wonderful. And that is the voice of Freddy Rodriguez, former pro cyclist who won the Classic in 2001. He's going to be the color commentator this weekend. We also heard from former mayor Michael Nutter, who helped bring this race together. And, of course, the man who started it all, Carlos Rogers, owner of Hush Salon in Old City, both Mayor Michael Nutter and Carlos, as well as Eric Robbins, are co-owners of the Philadelphia Cycling.
We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about the Circuit Trails Network and the effort to connect over 800 miles of bike and walking paths in our region. So it's not just about the pros, it's about all of us, too, getting out there.
Regulars like us. Yes.
I got a grip like a handle, and I'm biking with me and my dangle. AD's got the angels, TV's got the angles, I'm breaking.
And now back to Studio 2's live special at Love City Brewing in Manion.
And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Kevin McCrory in for Avi Wolfman. Aaron, we've been talking about this weekend's big bike race, the Philadelphia Cycling Classic, back on Sunday. And if you're feeling that biking fever now, well, let's get ready to pump up those tires, tune up those gears. And there's good news because we've got a wide network of trails here in the Philadelphia region to bike on.
Yeah, almost 500 miles of trails and many interconnected. That's the work of the Circuit Trails Coalition, and here to tell us all about it and where to ride is Amelia Crawtee. She's Southwest Regional Director with the Pennsylvania Environmental Council, a founding organization of the Circuit Trails Coalition. Amelia, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you so much. This has been such a treat.
Yes, and of course, listeners, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your Philly bike race memories and what you think its return means for the city. The email is studio2@whry.org. And for our Facebook and YouTubers, you can keep those comments coming on the live stream. Judy on YouTube says, Eric Heiden, oh my God, so great that he's on the show. And he's a surgeon now? Wow. Okay, Judy was impressed.
So,
Amelia,
I guess, you know, we're all kind of excited about biking right now. What are your tips and tricks for, like, how to best utilize the resources we have in this region?
Well, so this got me super – I was already excited about the Classic. And this segment has gotten me so excited about the Classic. So I suspect it will be the same for many other people. The issue is that many people get a little bit nervous when they consider getting out into street traffic and riding alongside cars, especially, I have to say, here in Philadelphia. Lucky for us, this region is the home to one of the most robust, well-connected trail networks in the region. I want people to be proud here in Greater Philadelphia that we have just one of the best trail networks in the nation. Mm-hmm. So we have 423 miles right now built of physically separated 10-foot-wide multi-use trails. Another 97 miles are in production. They're in design and construction. And we have hundreds more that are planned on the map. And this is all called the Circuit Trails Network.
And a big connection recently in Montgomery County, as I understand it, that's really helping us go from, you know, right around here in Philly up to, what, Reading?
Exactly, yes. It's connecting Chester County to Montgomery County, a big gap that has existed for a long time. So this is a huge deal. It's connecting at Route 422 in Pottstown. If you're not going to the Cycling Classic on Saturday, there's ribbon cutting at 1 o'clock. Montgomery County has done a really phenomenal job advancing the trail network in that county.
I want to talk about connectivity and why is it so important? Because, you know, you have different trails, but now there's an effort not to just connect the trails in our region, but all trails in other parts of the country as well.
Well, yeah, you think about a sidewalk network, a street network. A web is going to be more useful to people than just an X, you know, like if you're going north and south and east and west. So that is one of the benefits of the Circuit Trails Network is that we have so many of these like trunk lines. Most people know about the Schuylkill River Trail. They know about the Delaware River Trail. But then you have the Perkiomen, you've got the Pennypack, the Taconee, Cobbs Creek. There just are so many that of these smaller trails that come off of those trunk lines that make it just closer to people and more useful.
And so I wanted to ask you, I want you to give some advice for different people, different levels of riding, right? Where should beginners go? If you have kids, if you love scenery, or if you're like, you know what, I'm an athlete and I'm trying to like burn the legs out, you know, give us those four categories of your favorite trails in our region.
As a mom of two small children who just learned how to ride, the MLK Drive, the MLK Trail, I think is the best because it is
for kids.
It mirrors the Schuylkill River Trail, and while you've got all the runners and all the bikers on the Schuylkill River Trail, especially on the weekend, MLK is chill. MLK,
and there's no traffic on the weekend.
On the weekends,
you can be out in the middle of the street.
But
even
on a weekday, you've got the side path there, and it's low stress. I have to share this quick story that I was riding the other day on my cargo e-bike with my two kids in the back, you know, like chugging along, blasting music, and I think a Philly Cycling Classic guy went by us doing like a time trial. So a trail can be used for so many different uses. For beautiful scenery, the Perkiomen is stunning. The Delaware River Trail, you're right next to the beautiful Delaware River. And that one is like, you know, you can really get places. It's like fast up north and south.
And so if you're an athlete, if you want to be like, but you said you can use some of the more beginner trails as well, even if you're a super athlete. But is there a trail that's very challenging that you think, you know what, I've done it all, I need something that's...
Most of these trails are, because a lot of them are former rail lines, most of these trails are pretty flat. They're wide, they're paved, they're not going to be as challenging. I have to say, the Perkiomen I do enjoy because there is a little bit more grade. Many of them are flat. And you're like hardcore cyclists are going to know when to go, and that's going to be like super early in the morning.
And just speak a little bit, I guess, to the logistics of making these connections. It's really no small feat. There's so many things you have to figure out and expense that goes into that. And I think about, you know, here in Manayunk, it's like you come off of Kelly Drive, people got to go around the transportation terminal, and they're on the street and they're going down Main Street. It's clunky. We would love to see a better extension. Will something like that ever happen?
Yes, hopefully. And that was funded by a project. The city has identified this as a critical gap that needs to get filled right here at the Wissahickon Transportation Center. And it was funded by the federal government, but that project has been paused by the current administration. But there are plans in place. There are so many plans in place. And these projects do take a very long time. But the lucky thing for us here in this region, we have terrific funders in the place of the name of William Penn Foundation. We have a strong NGO community, and we have a really strong metropolitan planning organization that is really advancing all of these trails, working really hard day in and day out to create these connections.
And I'm sure it takes a lot of work on your effort. Can you talk about, we've been, you know, using the Manayunk Wall as a metaphor, and we talked about Carlos' story, but I'm sure that you have a similar journey sometimes when you're trying to make these connections. How do you, what powers you to do that?
Oh gosh, these projects can take forever. But it's the small wins that we celebrate, the small connections that, I mean, right now, and I just have to say the big marquee projects, the Schuylkill Crossing Swing Bridge that is about to open, like massive connection that's going to connect Southwest Philly to Center City. This is huge. And so, and even the beautiful new Crescent, by Gray's Ferry Crescent, the
bridge.
Say bridge. Just marquee projects that are here in Philly, in Greater Philly, that we should all just be really proud of, I think.
I love it. And with that, we're going to end the segment. Amelia Crotty, Southeast Regional Director with the Pennsylvania Environmental Council, thank you so much for being
here.
Thank you.
Please visit CircuitTrails.org.
Yes, circuittrails.org. Check it out. And by the way, got to say thank you to everybody who wrote in and celebrated the trails. And thank you to our producers, Debbie Bilder, Hazel Mae Bryan, Ben Abrams, and Paige Murray Bessler. Our engineers are Tina Calique, Ben Call, Mike Schiffler, Al Banks, Dan Rosenthal, Gary Lindstrom, Paul Parmalee, and Bud McHugh. Joan Isabella, of course, is our audio general manager. And Julian Hertzfeld is WHYY's media technology manager.
Special thanks to our live audience members here for joining us today.
You're awesome.
And to Alyssa Ellington and Christine Reimart with Divine Partners, Melissa Walter with Love City Brewing, Brady Gidney with Caden Cycling Centers, who hooked us up with these bikes up here. From Love City Brewing in Manayunk, Philadelphia, I'm Kevin McCord.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Thanks so much for listening.